the most important decision the next president of the United States will make, so many feel, is the appointment of the ninth Supreme Court Justice of the United States of America. He or she will determine how we the people live in so many ways, and what our Constitution really means today, and what our laws will be more than any other justice. Donald John Trump or Hillary Rodham Clinton will make that choice of the next ninth Supreme Court justice. There are now 8 justices of the Supreme Court at work, 4 of which are committedly liberal, voting in lockstep with predictable legal outcomes virtually all the time. Those 4 justices are Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. And they have voted the same and with each other consistently more than 90% in cases decided by the court. All liberal, of course. Conservative justices are Alito, Thomas, and not 6 months ago, Scalia, with Chief Justice John Roberts essentially voting conservative, but perhaps no more than 70% of the time, and Justice Anthony Kennedy, somewhat the same, but both unpredictable in some cases in their thinking and voting patterns. Antonin Scalia, now deceased, of course, was virtually always predictable. In fact, Scalia was the real legal leader of the entire United States Supreme Court, so many think, Chief Justice John Roberts notwithstanding. Antonin Scalia was perhaps the most profound and influential Supreme Court justice in modern times, and perhaps ever. He was brilliant, a deep legal scholar, a man who really knew the law, a man possessed with warmth, cheer, grace, and wit, liked and admired by so many, even those in the opposition, a man who had a profound understanding of the law and the Constitution. And that is why so many feel he is indeed irreplaceable. Justice Antonin Scalia had strong opinions about the principles of jurisprudence, which should govern the Supreme Court justices and, in fact, all judges. Scalia believed that the law, whether statutes or the Constitution itself, must be applied according to its text. Text. Judges, he believed, should never apply the law based on what is good policy or what they think Congress may have intended, but not overtly expressed with regard to language in the legislation as passed. In short, Scalia was a literalist, taking words as written and for what they meant without adding to or subtracting from, especially that precious document, our Constitution. The law should never be politicized, nor should Constitution or statutes be used for the benefit of politicians or parties or special interests. The actual text of the Constitution prevailed, so said Justice Scalia, and no judge had the right to add to or subtract from the text itself. The second principle of jurisprudence in which Justice Antonin Scalia firmly believed was that the words of the law and the Constitution should be understood as they were understood by the people when the law was enacted. If, for example, the law of contracts, a contract was made between 2 people, any interpretation of that contract should be made as the words were written and as the law was at the time the bargain was struck. A court should never determine what those words might mean years down the road, for, Scalia firmly believed, the meaning of words change over time and become unattached from any objective measure. In other words, what may be legal or understood one day may be illegal and completely different the next, without any textual changes in the law. The meaning of the law may evolve in some organic way, as it surely does in this day and age, but for Scalia, the meaning of the law and the Constitution is fixed in time by the meaning ascribed to those words at the time they were authorized. Scalia called that originalism. Originalism. Interpret legal words as they were enacted in accordance with the actual meaning those words had at the time, or change them. Consequently, those 2 principles, textualism and originalism, were absolutely critical for the right thinking of any justice or judge, so said Scalia. and both textualism and originalism are deeply rooted and find their authenticity in a third characteristic of Justice Scalia's jurisprudence, which was an unwavering respect for the idea of popular government. Our Constitution and any laws which may result therefrom, federal, state, or local, receive their legitimacy and their authenticity from we the people. The Constitution was not, for Scalia, an autonomously evolving document that spins out new rights and duties to which the people have not given their consent. Judges and justices cannot, in their infinite wisdom, divine new rights not overtly expressed in the Constitution, such as the right of homosexuals to marriage, for there is no justification in the Constitution for that. Such a critical issue is for the people to decide, the people and the states, not the federal government, through popular government, thought Scalia. And if the people have not given their consent, judges, especially judges, cannot make the law or add to it. They just can't do it. They shouldn't do it. That is judicial activism, and it's improper. Rather than discovering new rights in the Constitution, organically evolving as the times might allow, especially with regard to the Constitution, judges and justices should respect the constitutional prerogative, the right of the people to pass laws through their representative legislatures as they, the people, think are right and necessary, and constrained, of course, by the Constitution, which itself was, of course, ratified by popular vote and consent. If the people wish new rights, then the people, through their representatives, should add to those rights with and in the form of constitutional amendments in the Bill of Rights, but not from the mere mind of nine justices. If judges legislate judicial activism, that effectively puts an end to any democratic response to the rights of the people and turns America from democracy and republic to an oligarchy. An oligarchy, a rule by the few, namely nine justices. Judges have no right to creatively interpret the Constitution, so said Justice Antonin Scalia. Do you agree? And yet a fourth characteristic of Justice Antonin Scalia's principles of jurisprudence, and that was a conviction so firmly held that the rights which were actually enumerated and expressed and guaranteed in the Constitution, those freedoms should be tenaciously defended, his words, tenaciously defended. And that includes the right of free speech, to the rights of criminal defendants, and so much more in the Bill of Rights. Remember that freedom once lost, as Ronald Reagan said, is lost forever. Scalia believed that and urged us to never let that happen. The American people should be required to be diligent, defending, protecting those rights at all times and with all of their might. That is the duty of every citizen. And we should pay heed to that Scalia admonition now more than ever. And as a fifth and final Scalia principle of jurisprudence, the justice firmly believed that the Constitution sought to protect freedom and liberty as this document defined it in a structure of checks and balances, that is, between branches of government and division of powers. And that is especially so with the federal government, which has three branches of government, really four, namely the President, the House of Representatives, and the Senate, combined as Congress, and of course, the judicial court system. But in so many ways today, those four have become five because there is incredible power and even rogue operations by the various federal agencies which essentially legislate or define often beyond the powers granted by Congress. Our forefathers believed that their various branches of government would protect and defend their very own enumerated powers, check and balance at work, against the others, to make certain there was in fact balance in the enacting and implementation of all laws, including rules and regulations. In this day and age, when many think that Obama is a rogue president, legislating with his pen and his phone, whether or not a Congress has authorized such powers in any specific ways, that greatly upsets the balance of power. And the Senate often stonewalls the House of Representatives, and the House the same, rather than working together, also eviscerating check and balance. Judges can interpret and even make law, for example, the constitutional right to homosexual marriage, so that often the constitutional intention of political checks and balances is done away with. Scalia believed that would be the end of democracy, our republic, and to be sure the rule of law and the Constitution, and I couldn't agree more. The ultimate fate of the rule of law would be in the hands of judges executing judicial activism, executing and decided as they would, inventing the law and failing to do its duty, namely to make certain that the limits on government are strictly enforced. We see clearly at work the crumbling of the balance of powers, the checks and balances between branches of government, and we see that today more than ever in our history. And we the people sooner or later will pay the price, unless we get busy and protect and defend those freedoms, as Scalia warned. The new Supreme Court, as it will be determined in 2017, by the appointment of the Ninth Justice by our new president, will decide some critical issues and further expand constitutional reach. The court will be called upon to decide laws and controversies with respect to freedom of speech. That issue is a principle determined by the court's decision in the case Citizens United. You remember that one, Citizens United? Wherein the court held that the government may not limit the amount of money spent on political campaigns, whether by individuals, unions, or corporations with respect to their own independent political advocacy. Spend as you will to spread the word as you believe, and without monetary limitation. That issue will come before the new court in 2017 with certainty. And the Ninth Justice, if liberal, may well strike down Citizens United. The new full Supreme Court will also be called upon to decide what is and the limits of, hear this one loud and clear, hate speech. In short, the Supreme Court will have the opportunity to limit or further expand the concept of free speech as unconditionally guaranteed by the First Amendment to our Constitution. It may not be unconditionally guaranteed, depending upon that Ninth Justice. We can be sure that the liberal justices will vote to restrict free speech, providing criminal or civil sanctions for the use of hate speech. Hate speech. Four of them surely will, while the other four will undoubtedly vote against any condition or abridgment to free speech. That is, textualism, originalism, relying upon the words as they are written. Congress shall make no law abridging free speech, and neither should the Supreme Court. Again, in such a case, the Ninth and the new justice will provide the determining vote, one man or one woman, which may forever alter the true and plain meaning of our Constitution and the First Amendment forever and ever. There can be no more important vote than that, no greater issue than free speech, in my opinion, and no greater concern for the appointment of that Ninth Supreme Court Justice. By the way, who do you want to make that decision? Trump or Clinton? Which one? Freedom of religious conscience also hangs in the balance. The Supreme Court, when Justice Scalia was alive, in the Hobby Lobby case, protected the right of religious employers not to fund abortions. In due course, the Supreme Court will be called upon to decide whether civil rights laws can be used to force, for example, a Christian photographer to use her artistic skills to celebrate a same-sex wedding. Catholic nuns, the Little Sisters of the Poor, have asked the court to rule that they are not required to cover contraception in their health insurance plans. The court, now split, will be called upon to make that decision for sure, and the Ninth Justice will decide. Kind of scary, isn't it? And then comes the Second Amendment, where there can be any number of attempts to limit or control the right to keep and bear arms. The limitations on the ownership and use of firearms, guns, arms are proposed everywhere, and sooner or later, some kind of new control may find its authenticity in a new constitutionalism by a Supreme Court liberal in the majority. Remember that Ninth Justice? The court, liberal or conservative, will be asked to deal with the death penalty. And this new court, all nine of them, will be asked to deal with affirmative action and the regulation of the abortion industry and the voting laws, among many others. In the next 4 years, American jurisprudence and the principles of jurisprudence can radically change, all dependent upon the nomination and confirmation of the next and the ninth justice of the United States Supreme Court. Who, my fellow Americans, do you want to make that critical decision? Trump or Clinton? And perhaps another most important thing the Supreme Court, with its new justice, will deal with in the next 4 years is the matter of states' rights. States' rights. Our system of government is built around the concept of federalism. Federalism provides for a federal government with our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, but also now 50 states with their very own rights and their constitutions and their laws, which, if not unconstitutional, are in fact the supreme law of the land in that state, even if different from other states. The goal of the Obama administration has been to concentrate power in the federal government and minimize, and in some cases eliminate, states' rights and laws, making states subservient to the federal government rather than co-equal as the Constitution and the Founding Fathers intended. Gay marriage, for example, was once the province of the states to determine whether legal or not. States' rights in that regard to legislate have been eviscerated, even as the court has found the new constitutional right for gays to marry. Any of the laws of the 50 states which prevented gay marriage were automatically rendered null and void, and along with it the greater consequence of the loss of state power to so control its own legal decision-making. That Supreme Court decision struck a blow to federalism, a serious blow to federalism. And there has also been an ever-growing hostility toward the world of business. So many decisions, federal and state, with results anti-business, including and especially states like California. Boy, that great state is regarded as the most business-unfriendly state in the Union. And, of course, New York. At the federal level, the next or ninth justice of the Supreme Court may well render decisions consistent with that trend, damaging business and our economy generally. An organic or evolving, that is, creative, interpretation of the Constitution can well spell the restriction or even the end of so many of the precious constitutional rights we now hold. For those of us who wish to continue balance and the fair positioning of conservatism, the principles of jurisprudence in which Antonin Scalia firmly believed, namely, textualism, originalism, the right of the people to legislate, the aggressive defense of constitutional rights, and the checks and balances of power between branches of government and federalism as between the federal and state governments, they all must be fully respected and protected by the Supreme Court and especially by the Ninth Justice as appointed. Otherwise, our Constitution can well become virtually meaningless in so many ways, even with its plain words, and so many contexts will become different, and even give way to the policymaking and the current thinking of the court's liberal justices in the form of judicial activism. Such new power and interpretations will radically change the way we the people live. Get ready for those changes, my friend. In fact, when you vote for Trump, or when you vote for Clinton, you will, in essence, be voting for the appointment of that ninth justice, and on the one hand, a retention of the court's balance of power, or the shifting of that power to liberal. Remember that when you vote in November. And so, in summary, my fellow Americans, For whom will you vote? For whom will you vote? Donald, John, Trump, or Hillary Rodham Clinton? That vote, your vote, is a vote for the next and ninth Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States.